good morning, and welcome to Word of Mouth. I'm your host, Jim Wunderlich, and today my guests are Nan Buckhart and Allison Frederick of the Lake County Forest Preserve District. As the Environmental Communication Specialist, Allison Frederick acts as a liaison between the staff ecologist and the public, promoting major conservation initiatives, designing interpretive panels, and fielding public inquiries. As the Education Director, Nan Buckhart supports the major educational functions of the Lake County Forest Preserves, from public programs to field trips to events and beyond. And Nan and Allison, thanks for being on the program. It is just great to have you here. Thanks a lot for being here.
Thank you very much for having us.
It's a pleasure.
Speaking of events, after 54 years in the making, the 31-mile Des Plaines River Trail will be completed this summer. Hikers and bikers will be able to travel the trail from Lake Cook Road to the Wisconsin border. Incredible milestone. Yesterday I was biking from Lake Cook Road up to Independence Grove, and I'm just thinking, my gosh, this thing came from scratch. Isn't an old railroad bed. Just amazing. And maybe we should back up a little bit and just get the history. We're going to talk about the wildlife and all the natural resources that it has. My goodness, it's just an amazing trail. But I'm just curious, how did the notion of this Des Plaines River Trail come about? And it's just kind of curious to me, who had the vision for all this?
Well, decades ago, one of the boards of commissioners decided that they wanted to preserve the land along the Des Plaines River. And it was really a flood control idea that by having that land and controlling the erosion to it and keeping it in a healthy state, it's going to help the water health in the county. So that initial plan was to own all of the land along the Des Plaines River through the whole county. We're at about 85%. And that's a perfect place for us. The other owners, both public and private entities that own it along the land, care for the land and are really helpful in the flood control issue as well. But being able to control the land along it then gave us the opportunity to be able to create a trail that went from Wisconsin to Cook County.
So in other words, there's 15% of the trail, I didn't know this, is actually owned by private concerns then? Or
no, 15% of the property along the Des Plaines River.
Right, right.
Right, so it's not the trail part. It's
right.
The trail.
The greenway.
The land along the river, 15% is owned by people other than the Forest Preserve.
Okay.
So some of them are corporations, some are municipalities, and there's some private ownership. So there are homes that back up to the Des Plaines River. As you drive along or ride along on the trail, you'll see houses across the river from you, and that's all private property.
That's all private property then.
Right,
okay.
Right.
You know, it's sort of amazing to me that they were able to put a trail there too. I mean, it's just incredible. So how did that come about? So the whole idea then, first of all, we have the greenways, and that was pretty much for flood control. Then somebody had to have the notion for the trail itself, which is finally coming to completion this summer. So how did that all come about?
Well, it happened pretty naturally, as Nan said. Once the land was there, it was a really great stretch from the Wisconsin border down to Lake Cook Road. And it was a matter of determining where the trail would go. And so that's a team of landscape architects, ecologists, land surveyors. They all work together to determine which tree to go around and what's ecologically sensitive, what native flora and fauna we're dealing with, and it essentially goes parcel by parcel. Each little piece is unique, and it's planned site by site to then work together as a full trail system.
So what was the original part of the trail? In other words, when you first started, this all came about, if I'm not mistaken, it was back in the 50s, right, when this was all?
It was.
Help me out with this a little bit.
Right. Yeah. The Forest Preserve started in the late 50s, so the first parcels were right at the in 1960, about, was
60,
the first
okay.
parcel, and that was okay. Van Patten Woods.
Okay.
So that obviously started the investment along the Des Plaines River Trail, and then various parcels were purchased when they became available with willing sellers or just people coming to us and saying, we're interested in the Forest Preserve and helping you. In the early years, the purchases were a little farther between, because people...
What do you mean by that exactly?
Well, it took a while to connect everything. So the very first purchase was Van Patten Woods in Ryerson.
Which is
up in Zion.
Okay, that's up in Zion. So that's right. North.
That touches the Wisconsin border.
Okay.
And it's along 41, mm-hmm. right up there by the Wisconsin border. That was our first purchase.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Ryerson right. Woods, which is down in the very southern part of the county.
That's in Riverwoods.
In Riverwoods. Okay. And that also has the Des Plaines River run through it. That purchase was actually part of an estate dedication to us that the Forest Preserve took ownership in 1972. So the two ends were,
oh my gosh,
were perhaps, you know, 12, 10, a decade apart or more.
Good
and
gosh.
Then filling in between. And then the property is connected by easements.
Mm,
Commonwealth mm-hmm. Edison owns some of the land. And so we had to get permission to put a trail to connect the Forest Preserve property, for example. The trail goes through the Marriott Golf Course.
Oh, that's right.
We don't own that property. It's owned by the Marriott Resort, but we have an easement which allows us to travel across their property and put a trail. So there the trail is very narrow and doesn't have much width to it beyond the trail.
Mm-hmm.
But when you get into a place like Independence Grove, it's the land that we own on either side of the trail is significant.
Right, right. You know, it's amazing. Sounds like there are a lot of obstacles, challenges. I mean, we're looking at, is it 54 years in the completion of this trail or something like that?
But,
yeah,
you
know, it's significant.
A lifetime of sorts. So what were the major challenges or obstacles to put this trail together? I mean, I'm thinking you got a piece up here near the Wisconsin border. I got a piece down here by the Lake County, you know, we're talking about Lincolnshire, that area. Mm-hmm. And now filling that all in between. My goodness.
Right.
It's like a puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you said it exactly right. Those are two of the biggest challenges would be land and funding to mm-hmm. acquire the backbone that created this trail. Nan already mentioned the easements. And then the other obvious obstacle is where to cross the roadways, how to cross the roadways, and the agreements that we've worked with from municipalities to Lake County Department of Transportation to figure out exactly how to cross roadways in a minimal way, because you don't want to stop the trail ride, get off, and cross the road every half mile. So
are you talking about tunnels and bridges and things like that then?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Right. How to be able to do that.
How do you go about doing that?
The trail actually goes under the tollway.
Oh, my goodness. You're right. Yeah.
Up near Great America.
Yeah,
it
yeah.
actually goes. So the structure of the trail was to follow along the Des Plaines River. Now, the trail itself doesn't physically, you're not physically next to the river the whole way, but it does follow that course down. So if you were to follow a map and trace it with your fingers, you would see that it curves around. It's not a straight shot.
Right,
so it
right.
curves around. It goes. There are major roads that cross it. 120, for example.
Right, right,
that
right,
crosses.
Right.
So we
176.
176.
Route 60. These are big routes.
Huge, huge
right,
roads.
Right,
so
right.
There needed to be a strategy in place on how we were going to be able to cross those roads, and some of it was an advantage opportunity for us to be able to cross the road. For example, when the tollway construction happened 10 years ago, that major widening of the
right,
tollway,
right, right, right.
all the bridges were being rebuilt. And at that point, we worked with the toll authority to be able to make sure that we could have our trail underneath their bridges and be able to continue under the tollway in a safe way for all the trail users.
Was that easy to do? I mean, is how you're dealing with IDOT. Was that, I mean, I don't mean to get too gossipy or personal, but I'm just wondering, it just seems to me that it's not just a quick slam dunk, is it?
Well, it takes time.
Yeah.
And there's
yeah.
negotiation
yeah,
because you
yeah.
need to make sure that everything is in place. Mostly those negotiations take time, but the idea of them is really important, especially with the Lake County Department of Transportation. They're very interested in trails and connecting communities to one another mm-hmm. in a safe way for bicyclists as well. All the spokes.
Mm-hmm.
So when they do their projects, they're really interested in making sure that they are helping us connect mm-hmm. pieces. So Those negotiations sometimes are hard and sometimes have to be delayed because the work on that road's not going to happen for 7 years,
but
we can plan for it.
So everybody's really got they're looking at the plan. Everybody's on the same page for the plan. It's how do we get to the plan,
right,
more or less. Okay.
Right, and that's sometimes the challenge, and some it just takes a while. There, some of the big chunks we didn't own for many, many years. So there was a piece of the trail that was built in this community, but it didn't connect to that community for many years. And
wow.
Now,
what would be an example of that, for example?
The trail that goes from old school,
yeah,
and down
nice.
To
yeah.
MacArthur Woods,
mm-hmm.
and down to Daniel Wright Woods, that's as far as it went for many years until we worked on the piece that for the Marriott to get down through the Marriott and around Ryerson. So, but we knew that we wanted to have those trail connections. So it's figuring out what that means and how to put it in place and the layering and the funding and the permissions and all of those things. So it's been many, many generations of boards of commissioners. It's been many generations of various landscape architects and surveyors and planners and working on this plan over the years, all with that intent to complete that vision of having that greenway in place and having the trail there.
Well, and just the tunnel itself. I'm thinking of the one under St. Mary's Road.
Right.
I mean, good gosh, that is a lot of effort and work.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's just wonderful for hikers and bikers.
And one of the great things, too, is that many of those tunnels are the result of successful grant applications by Forest Preserve staff to be able to offset the cost or a very large portion of the cost. So it doesn't come out of any funding that we get from the taxpayers of Lake County, that they were actually grants that were given to us to be able to increase trail passages in a safe way.
Well, I've noticed in terms for the taxpayer, when you look at the pie chart, the Lake County Forest Preserve is a sliver. And that's why I'm always thinking, how the heck do you find money for these bridges, the benches? I mean, I can go on and on, just, you know, all sorts of, you know, there's a bench there, improvements. And so a lot of it is grant money that supports this, and donations, I assume.
Yeah. Donations, exactly. Grant money, good planning.
Good planning.
Yeah. We do plan out our projects many years in advance to try to make sure that we have the funding. And certainly the support of the voters has been huge for us. We've gone out to referendum several times, perhaps some of your listeners are going to hear. And we've always gotten really great support from the citizens of Lake County for a couple of reasons. First of all, we're considered a really tremendous amenity to the community in so many ways. Personally, economically, you know, it's just so many ways that people use us. So we're that amenity, but also we're a good value.
Oh,
less than
yeah,
3 cents on any tax dollar
goes, is that what it is?
Goes to the Forest Preserve, which is very small in comparison to the other services that are supported by taxes.
Now, the word greenway has been coming up as we've been talking, and maybe we should define greenway. Now, is that the adjacent property to the trail, or maybe I'm off on that?
Well, greenway is a strip of undeveloped land near an urban area. So that's a general way to look at it. It's set aside for recreational use or environmental value and protection. And in this case, it was set aside for both purposes. Not only does the greenway provide flood control benefits and a recreation corridor, it also provides protection pathway for the movement of animals and even plants.
So a greenway could be as big as Independence Grove, for example. Is that considered a greenway? Or am I off on this?
The greenway is the entire length, the linear length.
Okay.
It's not just a chunk of land. It's a series of chunks of land making a connection.
But if the Independence Grove is part of that chunk, does it become the greenway then? Mm. Not that this really matters, but I've always wondered about this greenway thing.
Yeah,
it's something I'm stuck on.
Yeah, natural corridor is an easy way to look at it. So if you picture a map of all the forest preserves, there are some that float out as islands of preservation. And then there are many like the Des Plaines River Corridor, the Millennium Trail, those larger pieces that are connected. That's what you would consider a greenway, something big enough for wildlife or plants to move along, you know, undivided space.
So that had to be purchased too, these greenways, as well as like Hawthorne Woods, I'm talking MacArthur Woods, as you mentioned.
That was
Wright
part
Woods,
of it.
Old School, Independence Grove.
So all
was that
of
land
those...
just there then, or was that private property? For example, with Independence Grove, where does that come in exactly?
Independence Grove was originally a stone quarry.
That's what I thought.
So that's one of the reasons it's such a developed area. Typically, where you know we have minimal trails and parking lots and pit toilets, but because of the history of Independence Grove and the fact that it was a stone quarry, it was a great opportunity for us to, you know, provide a good mix of restoration and new habitat areas and also a nice recreational core for the county.
How deep is that? Any idea?
I should know. I've done the map.
I didn't mean to put you on the spot.
It's
that's a crazy question.
Feet in the very middle of South Bay. I always get them confused.
I just talked over you. Yeah. What did you say?
About 20 feet is the absolute deepest point, but it's a very small little middle portion. I would say the average is closer to 10, 12.
So it started off as a quarry, and then, my goodness, you've got all kinds of gardens there and everything else. Was all that put, how did that all come about?
Well, it really has a terrific story
because
the Forest Preserve, when they purchased that property, it was an active gravel quarry. And they decided to allow a license to continue to mine that gravel. And with each of the loads of gravel that went out, we received a fee. And that fee was then put into a bank account and collected over the years that it was allowed to continue. And then at the very end, when it was mined out, we allowed a different company to come in and use that area as a staging area for a reclamation project for concrete chunks and things where they'd break it apart to reuse it. So as we were planning this, and they helped to reform the quarry so it wasn't so just straight sides, and to shape it so it became much more natural. And they were actually instrumental in helping us to be able to shape the lake that you see there.
It's beautiful.
It's a gorgeous lake. So it was a whole, it was,
and it's free to all Lake County residents.
It was planned so well, and it was planned with community input, but they very thoughtfully thought about what's going to be the life of this piece of property long term. And how can we make sure that it's available? So it's another example of the Board of Commissioners and the staff at that time having great vision as to what they wanted to do with the property long term, rather than, a gravel quarry that has nothing to do with us. That's it. But it was land along the Des Plaines, and it was land that was important to that vision to be able to help in the flood control and the water quality issues that Lake County was seeing then and forecasted into the future.
It is absolutely a crown jewel. It is just something else. I do remember when it was this quarry, and whoever had this vision, I mean, it is just incredible. You know, now you have weddings there and everything else. It's crazy. Was there any one person who had the vision, or was it just a collective group of people who, looking back at this, the greenways and the trail, was there any one person who at all that we can look at, or is it basically a collection of people?
I don't have the opportunity to say this very often, but I was really little when this decision was made. I was just a little kid. I don't get to say that much. So I don't know.
Good answer, man. Good answer. Okay. Well, I tell you what, we've alluded a little bit to the recreational opportunities with the Des Plaines River Trail, the greenways, and some of these wonderful forest preserves that are adjacent to the greenways. What are some of these? I mean, I've mentioned hiking and biking, but I'm assuming there's other stuff to do as well.
In terms of recreation?
Yeah, recreation.
Well, you mentioned hiking, biking, cross-country skiing is a very big recreational use of the trail. Paddle sports are really really important. Canoeing, kayaking, we offer programming along the Des Plaines River, and you see many people just out on their own doing that. Fishing, of course. You can fish in many of the Forest Reserve areas and from the canoe launches. We have canoe launches across the whole stretch of the corridor. And the most northern part, is that right, Nan, is snowmobiling is allowed.
Right. Oh, I did not know that.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
So, okay. Yeah, we do have, in certain areas of the county, snowmobiling designated trails. So that occurs in some northern pieces of the Des Plaines River Trail.
Well, so can I make one note? The cross-country ski trails, is it possible, and I don't know if you guys have the clout to do this, to have a designated groomed trail?
Done. We have groomed trails on two sites.
When I say designated, that would mean, though, no other transport. Horses wouldn't be allowed. Walking wouldn't be allowed. It would just be for cross-country skiers. I'm putting you on the spot. I'm sorry about that.
Nearly all of our trails are multi-use.
Right,
and that's the design of them and the intent of them.
Yeah.
So I'm sorry to say, I don't expect to have one trail that would only be for cross-country skiing.
Okay. I just wondered. DuPage County has one. They're just kind of, okay, just that was just an aside. My one little getting on my soapbox there.
No problem.
Yeah. That aside, though, it is just an incredible trail, as we were saying. Some of the challenges in maintaining the trail, after a winter, after a wet spring, what happens then in terms of making that trail well-maintained?
Well, high water, obviously, can be a very big challenge. So we close the trails and when the underpasses flood. And then, obviously, heavy rain at any time of year can cause erosion issues along the trail and along the edges of the river as well. So it can wash out the trail. Erosion can be a safety issue. So we work really hard in the maintenance crews get out there and they clear washouts really quick. Debris, we have a really strong volunteer group that removes log jams from the river, the water trail keepers. So there's a lead steward there and they have lots and lots of work days where they're out there and they use it, you know, recreationally, but they never leave without their chainsaws and an entire canoe full of trash. And so they pick up along so that all goes together.
It's a very clean trail, too. I mean, it is really pristine.
That speaks to how much it's appreciated by the users.
Mm-hmm.
If the users respect it, they're going to keep it clean. It's not unusual to see someone who was just out for a walk leave the trail with a little bag of trash that they pick up themselves.
It's just rare to see a gum wrapper or a can or anything. I mean, it is an amazing.
That speaks
31 miles, you know.
That speaks totally to the care and respect that the users give.
You know, we're also talking about the completion of this trail. So there was one more little piece that had to be purchased. What you want to tell me a little bit about that? So now that it goes from Lake Cook Road all the way to the Wisconsin border, what was that one little piece that was missing?
That one little piece is down in the Lincolnshire area, and it was a private owner, and he really, he loved his land, and he wasn't ready to sell his land. And finally, we've negotiated with him to get a small sliver of the land right next to the river so that we can complete that piece. He still owns a large chunk of land that runs from the edge of our trail over to Milwaukee Avenue. So it was just a small portion of his land. And we're going to be completing that trail fall. We don't know the exact completion date because the contract bid hasn't been let yet. Mm-hmm. So we don't know for sure when the work's going to start. And then it depends completely on weather this summer and how that goes.
Again, it just shows all the puzzle pieces that have to come together.
Exactly.
And it's just fascinating. I want to talk just a little bit and you talked a little bit about the flood control. What are some of the other health benefits that the trail provides?
Well, being active in nature has obvious physical benefits, getting out there and being active, and mental health benefits as well. There's a growing body of research that shows the benefits to spending time outdoors, the more the better, essentially. So that's an obvious benefit. And then to the community as a whole, aside from flood protection, it also filters pollutants, It recycles potentially harmful nutrients, provides food and habitat for many types of fish. Birds use the area. It's a migratory corridor as well. These streams play a critical role in maintaining the quality and supply of our drinking water, ensure continual flow of water to surface waters and groundwater recharge. So there are many, many ecosystem functions that are supported by a river of this size.
Have you noticed over the years that the flood control has become more of an issue than maybe in years past?
Yes.
And so in terms of the Des Plaines River, is it able to accommodate that?
Well, it accommodates it by stretching over larger pieces of property.
Right, right.
And that's our property and private homeowners and subdivisions that weren't affected 30 years ago. Mm-hmm. There's lots of pieces to that puzzle, and a lot of it just has to do with the amount of hard surfaces that are now found in Lake County that weren't here 50 years ago, the number of parking lots and roadways, et cetera. And each of those hard surfaces has an impact onto where the water goes when it rains.
Mm-hmm.
And when we have larger rain events, which is what's been happening in the last decade, that we don't necessarily get a lot more rain every year, but it comes in bigger chunks, then it's harder for the land to absorb all of that water, and it has to go somewhere, and it runs to the Des Plaines River. A good chunk of Lake County drains into the Des Plaines River.
And thank God that river is there.
Right.
Really.
Right.
I'm talking to ecologist Nan Buckhart and Allison Frederick of the Lake County Forest Preserve District. When we come back, we'll talk about the wildlife that inhabits the Des Plaines River Trail and the conservation measures being implemented to sustain it. You're listening to Word of Mouth, and we'll be back right after this. That's John Fogarty on the vocals and Green River, CCR, Creedence Clearwater Revival. And you're listening to Word of Mouth. My name is Jim Wunderlich. I'm talking to ecologists Nan Buckhart and Allison Frederick of the Lake County Forest Preserve District. And if you're just joining us, we've been talking about the 31-mile Des Plaines River Trail that will be completed this summer. And before the break, we were discussing all these wonderful benefits of the trail. And I guess another benefit is, as I hike and bike the trail, just amazed by the abundance of wildlife. And it's just beautiful when you can see a coyote or a deer on the trail, or a blue heron, or whatever. And how is the Des Plaines River Trail an important natural resource for wildlife?
Well, the green space itself is important, but having more than 3,500 acres connected over a 31-mile stretch gives wildlife the opportunity to move freely and safely across a larger area.
And that's important to the wildlife itself. Some wildlife needs a fair amount of space to be able to successfully breed and find food and mates, et cetera. And by being able to move and follow this spine along the Des Plaines River gives them that ability, and that's why we see so much wildlife.
Speaking of the wildlife itself, so what are some of the animals? I mentioned coyote and deer and a blue heron, but I mean, there's so many more other animals. What are some of the animals that you can mention?
Well, great blue heron gets a lot of credit, but I've seen black-crowned night herons. I've seen green herons along the trail.
Green herons.
Mm. They look like a chicken when they're in flight. They have this funky flying pattern, and they're really neat. They're a much smaller heron, so you'll see them along the shore fishing and fish, obviously. And there are many species of fish in the Des Plaines River. The basics: raccoons, possums, skunks, beavers. Have you ever seen a beaver while you were out there?
Definitely have seen beavers. And one thing, we go to the dog park quite frequently. And you know what I've noticed? They're busy and active putting together their dams. But then meanwhile, there's a lot of trees that are coming down there too. You know, that kind of gets back to the ecological situation, the balance of nature. And so they've really been at it with devouring some of the trees, or at least cutting them down and then using them for their dam.
For their lodge.
Yes. Thank you very much.
For the
lodge.
Not to say there aren't dams out there. There are, but yeah. Lodge is the most.
Right.
Right. Most of the some of the beavers actually are bank-dwelling beavers, where they excavate holes in the bank, and they don't even use the trees as structures at all. What they're wanting the trees for is food.
Oh,
they
okay.
cut down the trees, and then they eat the young twigs and leaves. That's their food source.
So as a district, there is this kind of balance, mm-hmm. too. So let's say I'm walking along the dog park, which is next to Independence Grove, which is down in Gurnee, Libertyville area. And so you start to see all these trees being, for sake of a better word, I'll just use destroyed. And destroyed, I just saw you furrow your brow when I used that word. Go ahead. Absolutely. Yeah, say, go ahead. Just jump in, man.
Beavers are doing what beavers have done
exactly,
for
yeah.
thousands and thousands of years, yeah. long before Europeans settled Lake County. There were beavers here cutting down trees to get food and using them. And we have trees today. They didn't disappear because of the beavers in 1410 cut down a tree. So it's part, it's just
That's
part of what happens.
Right.
The thing that makes it most difficult for us in management mm-hmm. is that people don't always understand the habits of animals and that they're doing what they're supposed to do and that it's not harmful to the environment to have a tree cut down by a beaver. In fact, many of the trees that grow along the Des Plaines River are very fast-growing trees, and the young growth is really good for many, many animals. And it's helpful to have those trees cut down and replaced by young growth. So the beavers are actually part of the ecological cycle, which maintains the health of the land along the river. And without them, it's not as healthy. So it's really, really important to understand that what humans consider danger is probably not an issue.
Mm-hmm. Some of the animals that do live occasionally will be injured. And so it can happen where you come upon an injured animal when you're hiking or biking. And is it ever okay to intervene? I've always been told when I was a little kid in grade school, you know, just it'll find its way. And I mean, what should we do if we see, for example, a pup, a baby coyote that's been injured or any animal?
Well, it's important to remember that it's a wild animal and that it can be a potentially dangerous situation. And especially when you add an injury to the mix, if you're dealing with an injured animal, they're going to try and get away from a human at all costs, and that could cause more injury to the animal itself. And,
or to you.
Or to the human that's mm-hmm. trying to encounter it. So the number one tip is, you know, keep your safety in mind and just keep a distance. So it depends on the type of injury. There are rehabilitation centers out there that handle these calls all the time and can walk you through steps to determine when human intervention might be helpful. But in most cases, just keep a distance, watch it. If it's not moving for an extended period, then it's time to make a call and talk to an expert.
Is that a little bit different if you see a orphaned animal, for example? I mean, or should still keep your distance, or go ahead, Nan.
Interacting with a wild animal stresses it tremendously, and that affects its ability to deal with any sort of situation. So, in fact, trying to help the animal sometimes can harm it to the point where it's going to die
mm-hmm.
because it's too stressed out. And people have such compassion for animals that it's hard for some people to understand that by actually trying to intervene, you're harming the animal more than if you left it alone. There are many, many animals that their strategy for the young surviving is to leave them alone because they're less vulnerable if they're not moving and not seen. But when the mom comes, that's when predators might pick up that there's something over there that they should be going to investigate. So, for example, baby rabbits are fed twice a day, dusk and dawn. If you find a nest of baby rabbits at noon, leave it alone. The mom's not there. She's not going to take care of it. She mm-hmm. doesn't want to take care of it. You're messing with it. They're not abandoned. So the compassion that people have sometimes is misplaced. So the best thing to do would be to give a call to the Forest Preserve or check our website that has a whole section on what to do with injured and baby animals. And mostly it's leave them alone because that's their best chance of survival.
You mentioned a rehabilitation center. So is that an extreme case where one might go to a rehab center?
Sure. Like if you saw a raptor along the roadway, birds are protected. It's obviously not going to fly again. It has a broken wing. That would be a good example. See a baby deer without a mother. It's not an orphan, most likely. The mother probably knows exactly where you are, saying, hey, get away from my baby, watching you from a distance, and just back away.
Where are these rehab centers?
They're all licensed by the state or the federal government. The Forest Preserve does not have those kinds of permits to be able to rehab animals. But if you gave us a call, we do have a list of them. They're also a list on the Illinois Department of Natural Resources website that you could call and ask. Some of them are very specialized in which animals they take. So not everybody's trained in how to care for certain animals, and so you have to find the right one. But our staff can help to point you in the right direction.
Talking about wildlife, seems to be more deer, more coyote in the area. And is there a concern regarding the overabundance of certain animals like deer and coyote?
Well, It can be ecologically damaging for especially overabundant deer. So we do have a deer management program. We monitor many wildlife species on a regular basis, but deer have their own program where we...
How do you monitor exactly?
Well, we use a number of methods. Plant monitoring goes into that. We have...
Plant monitoring. You have to dumb it down a little bit for me.
Oh, sorry. We count the plants and in some cases count the stem heights of certain plants that are candy to deer. For example, white trillium. You see blankets of those in the southern preserves. So you may have noticed a large caged in area. We call that a deer exclosure. So we have permanent transect lines. That's a line through the forest in this case, where every X number of meters, we drop down a square and we count everything that's in it. We count the stem heights of trillium. We do that inside of the deer exclosure where the deer can't reach. And we do it just outside of that exclosure. And that difference tells us, hey, are we making a difference with our monitoring and our management efforts?
That's fascinating.
In addition to plant monitoring, we also count the deer themselves. We do aerial flights by helicopter. So we survey in helicopter, low flying, low altitude every winter. In the winter. So the trees don't have leaves. There's nice. So we wait till snow cover. So the deer actually stand out and it's much easier to count them than you might think.
Higher visibility. Yeah.
Yeah. So we count the number of deer at many permanent locations annually. And in addition to that, we do pellet counts. So we go out and we count the scat of deer. And we compare those two numbers, and that lets us know where our deer populations are, you know, preserve to preserve.
And it's all based in accepted research that many of the wildlife managers across the nation are using the same research and understanding of the deer populations that have been developed over years and years.
So is there too much deer, or what do you, I mean?
In some cases.
Yeah.
Too much for our mission. Preservation, biodiversity is one of our main goals. So that's the number of species at any given site. And so if you have too many of one species, it might be eating the wildflowers, which then affects everything that they support, and your biodiversity as a whole goes down. So too many deer for us, certainly, and for the state. Actually, it's interesting fact that the state owns the animals, the Forest Preserve owns the land and the plants, but the state permits and has control over the animal populations.
Interesting.
So anytime we do
a
research project, or we have we have to work with the state in any of our animal related research and activities.
Coyote. Seems to be an abundance of coyote, more so than just 10 years ago, 5 years ago. Go ahead, Nan.
The state says that the population is fairly stable and has been fairly stable for the last 20-ish years, but that because coyotes have become very adapted to living with humans, they're more visible to humans. They've been here, they just were more secretive. So it's one of those funny things that you don't notice them until you start to see them, mm-hmm. right? But as a nocturnal animal, you don't. It's one of those things you can easily not know that you have a skunk in your backyard until it sprays. And right. the same thing with the coyotes is that you don't pay attention to them until you start to see them because they have a den near a trail, or they use your backyard as a pathway for hunting, or that your bird feeder spills out in the wintertime and attracts mice in the night, and then the coyotes come to eat the mice. And so then all of a sudden you're seeing them, but you're thinking they're coming to get you when they're coming to get the mice that you drew to your backyard.
So that brings up an interesting situation. If I am close to a coyote, I encounter a coyote, what are some things we should be aware of?
Well, it depends on the situation. If you were
walking
your dog was going to be my first example. Okay. Make sure your dog is on a leash. There are a number of reasons for that, but a coyote is a good example. Because though dogs are not considered prey for coyotes, they are considered a territorial threat. And so coyotes may group up. They often live in family groups. The pups from last year, for example. So you might have a group of coyotes kind of physically try and chase your dog away. But coyotes have a natural fear of humans. So if you have your dog on a short leash and you're near your dog, they're going to be scared of you. The coyotes will be scared of you and are less likely to threaten your dog directly. If you're out alone, it shouldn't be an issue because, like I said, they have that natural fear of humans. And so they're probably going to scurry away before you ever see them, or they'll be so far down the trail, it wouldn't ever be an issue.
But sometimes young coyotes in early fall, they're just curious. I liken them to being tweens, that they just want to know what's going on, and they don't know the coyote protocol of staying away from humans all the time. So sometimes they do come closer because they want to figure out who you are and what you're doing, not because they want to threaten you. Mm-hmm. They're stupid animals at that point.
Yeah, certainly.
So again, you give them space. They're wild animals. Mm-hmm. You're wild animals. But looking big, shouting at them, that's not a bad thing.
Yeah, show them your territory, the boundaries for your territory. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, as they do get closer and closer to humans, and we provide these bird feeders that provide the mice, or messy garbage cans, whatever it might be that's drawing in the coyotes to your area, they are then rewarded by you know, getting closer and closer to humans. So we want to make sure that we're cleaning up after ourselves and reinforcing that natural fear of humans that they do have. Don't feed the coyotes. Don't leave your own pet food for your dogs out on the porch, because coyotes will be drawn to it, or the mice that then bring in the coyotes. So, you know, all these things will help us live with them in closer proximity.
Does that go for skunks too?
It goes mm-hmm. for any wild animal.
Okay, because there seems to be a tremendous amount of abundance of skunks in the suburbs.
The skunks do have a real population curve where they really build up and then they just crash. The population crashes, so that's not an unusual phenomenon with skunks. But they take advantage of humans, just like any animal that's going to be around. The animals were here before the humans, and so the humans forget that sometimes and think that the animals are the bother, and we're really the bother to the animals, whether we want to admit it or not.
Well, we built where their land is.
That's right. So we need to just be smart about it, because leaving pet food outside is going to attract perhaps mice that will attract the coyotes, but it could attract skunks or raccoons or possums or any of those animals that potentially will do damage to your house, or could be just a bother in other ways.
Getting back to the Des Plaines River Trail, and I think we had mentioned this in the segment one, but just briefly about it's an important natural resource for birds. And do you want to expand on that a little bit? And maybe I could even ask what types of birds migrate and reside there. We talked a little bit about the blue heron and the green heron, but I know you wanted to talk a little bit more about that. Go ahead.
Sure, I want Nan to. She's my birding mentor. So.
Okay, all right.
The Des Plaines River Greenway is just really so valuable to birds, and especially birds in migration, especially in spring. Right now is a great time. The birds are just starting to migrate back, and in the next few weeks, we will have literally hundreds of thousands of birds moving through the Chicago area.
No kidding.
And they'll use the Des Plaines River corridor as part of their migration route because that's where the food is. All of these mature trees, especially oak trees, are really key to the food for these birds. The lower Des Plaines River preserves, which is MacArthur Woods, Half Day Forest Preserve, Daniel Wright, and Ryerson Woods, that whole area has been designated as an important bird area in North America. There's just hundreds of species of birds that will come through that area because of the mature trees there, and especially the oaks.
So the bird thing is, I mean, that's a big deal here with the Des Plaines River Trail.
It's a really, really big deal. And as an aside, many, many birders come to Lake County to see the birds that we have here. We have such diversity of habitats that we draw a very large variety of birds here that are birds that come to nest, and some that are here all year long, and some just migrate through. But that's an economic driver for our communities as well, because people stop and get gas and go to lunch and all those things that from other areas, they come here to see the birds that are found in our county because of the rich natural resources.
Well, and the trail itself. I mean, there are people from Chicago who come out and see the Des Plaines River Trail.
Right.
And
right.
They're just amazed. What, you have 31 miles here of this trail, and then you have spokes that go to it. I mean, it's just incredible. I mean, it really is something.
And it continues beyond that. It doesn't stop at the county line. It continues into Cook County. So it's a major corridor for a trail.
By the way, I am talking to Allison Frederick and Nan Buckhart from the Lake County Forest Preserve. We have a few minutes left, and did want to talk a little bit about the some of the initiatives that are going to be taking place in the future. What are some of the major conservation initiatives planned by the Lake County Forest Preserve District? I think we talked a little bit about dam removals before. What's that all about?
Well, very soon, Des Plaines River and Lake County will be free-flowing, meaning there will be no more dams, and so that's really important for fish movement and movement within the river itself.
How do you go about doing that then? I mean,
We're working with the Department of Natural Resources. They're the people that wanted to make sure that the dams were removed for the wildlife continuity and flow. And so actually it's being funded by the state. Believe it or not, we get state funding for this one to be able to remove these dams. And it's carefully staged where part of the river will be diverted around the Lowhead Dam and will be dried out, pumped dry. The dam structure will be... Part of it will be removed. There's a sheet of steel that's vertically placed in the river, and so that will be cut off at the bottom. And then once all the work is done and we have the rocks and things in place that we want to be able to still create pockets of riffles and tumbling water to make sure that there's lots of oxygen in the river as well. Then the structures, the barriers that protected that area will be removed and moved to the other side. And then it will be repeated. And we have two Lowhead dams that are going to be removed in the next 6 or 8 months.
No kidding. Mm-hmm.
Through the summer.
Yeah, through the summer. So.
Where are those exactly?
One
is the one in Daniel Wright Woods.
Exactly.
That's going to be gone.
Mm-hmm,
right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then the one just north of Route 60.
Hmm. That's kind of nice for canoeists, too.
It's great.
Right. Right.
Not just
no
the
more
fish.
Portages.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Because you would have to stop right there, mm-hmm. and now you can just zip right through.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
Speaking of fish, is it stocked, Des Plaines River Trail, or is it's just all natural fish then? But
no,
Independence Grove,
fish.
For example, is stocked then?
We did some initial stocking when Independence Grove opened, but because it's a catch and release site, it's a self-sustaining population. And because the size of the lake is such that it's a successful breeding fish nursery. And so we can just keep that nursery going because it's catch and release, that people don't remove the fish.
So you don't have to put fingerlings in every year?
Okay. Not at all.
Not Independence Grove.
And in fact, interestingly, when we actually allowed the water to start to build up to form the lakes there, we brought two buckets of lake water from another lake and threw it in, and that was the microorganism base for the entire lake. And
no
those
kidding.
Microorganisms and the little algae multiplied over time to be able to feed the fish population that's in there now.
That's crazy.
It is crazy.
That's pretty economical.
It's a wonderful thing that nature can take care of itself.
Right, right, right. Any other initiatives that you're concerned about, or the conservation initiatives that are planned by the district in the future?
Well, since we're talking about the Des Plaines River, Nan mentioned the complex of forest preserves along the southeastern portion of the river. And again, those are MacArthur Woods, Half Day, Wright Woods, Granger Woods is in there, Ryerson Woods, and Cahokia Flatwoods, which is just south of Ryerson. That complex contains some of the highest quality natural areas in all of the county.
Actually, the region.
The region. And because of that, and because of what we've noticed with the oak populations, we've started a major restoration initiative down in that neck of the woods. And that's essentially opening up the canopy to ensure the future of oaks, because they're not getting beyond the teeny tiny seedling stage and emerging as saplings. And so there's no when the big trees fall, when the big oaks are gone, there are no younger teenage oaks there to take their place. Hmm. So there's a major restoration project that has begun down there.
That growth.
And you use the phrase opening up the canopy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think of that in rainforest. But
all trees have canopy. It's just the leaf, the area covered by the leaf in the shade. Mm-hmm. That's the canopy.
Okay.
So if you think, what we're thinking about is how much light is actually reaching the ground floor and where those seedlings live. And not just the seedlings, but native shrubs are greatly reduced in those areas. Hydrology has changed. So it all goes into a major restoration project down in that area.
You know, I noticed on the website that the Forest Preserve District approved a 100-year vision of the of Lake County. In a way, we've been talking about planning from the get-go when we started the show. I mean, it's incredible, the amount of planning and vision. So what's the most important mission of this of the plan? I mean, 100 years out, that's pretty impressive that you're thinking that far ahead. So what's the basis for that?
Well, you're right that it was a lot of thinking and trying to figure it out. And we know that as we work to make the land as healthy as possible, that takes time to happen. Planting trees, they're not cartoon trees where in the next 10 minutes they're going to be full grown. Mm-hmm. It's going to take decades sometimes. And so to see the real benefit of if some of the work that we're doing may be decades, it may be 100 years before we see some of it. So we thought it was really important to be able to plan that far out. And we also know that all the work that we do in our land can't be the only work that's done in Lake County. And so our vision actually includes all of the natural land in Lake County and all of the communities and all of the neighborhoods so that we can make this county as a high quality ecological county that we can. And can really help everybody benefit from it, because whether your subdivision has a little marsh that can be acting to help with flood control or water improvement, that's a good thing. And that helps the forest preserves. And the forest preserves doing that on their land helps your neighborhood. And so it really is a joint deal. And we want those boundaries to kind of blur and help communities and neighborhoods understand that they can play a really important role in the ecology and the health, the physical, mental health of humans, but also in the land.
I tell you, I can't thank you guys enough for coming. I wish we had more time. We've run out of it. Real quick, last question, though. With the completion of the Des Plaines River Trail, this 31-mile crown jewel, any kind of celebration coming up? Hey, wait, we did it. I mean, this is pretty amazing. In segment one, we were talking about all the pieces of the puzzle that had to come together to put this beautiful trail together.
Certainly. Yeah. We're very, very excited, and there will absolutely be a celebration as a result, likely in the fall, but though nothing is planned. So we encourage you to keep checking into our website, www.lcfpd.com. .org. We won't be quiet about it when the celebration is planned. We've asked members of the community to pitch in, so there are a number of great ideas out there, so we'll pull it all together and we'll have some hoopla.
One thing that we are doing this summer, starting soon with Allison and another staff member, is that they're going to actually walk the length of the Des Plaines River and blog about it on our monthly blog, our nature blog. And they're going to be taking that bird's eye view, that human perspective, and talking about all the variety of things that you can see along the Des Plaines River Trail.
I tell you, you guys are the best. Thank God for people like you. Allison and Nan, thanks for being on the program today. Really appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having us.
It was a pleasure.
If you wish to contact Education Director Nan Buckhart or Environmental Communication Specialist Allison Frederick, visit the Lake County Forest Preserve website. I'm going to mention it one more time, www.lcfpd.org. And thank you for tuning in. I hope you'll drop by again next Thursday morning at 11 o'clock a.m. when we talk to another captivating guest on Word of Mouth.